Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Emily Palmer, and I'm your host and producer of the talk show Turning Heads, right here on UMFM 101.5. On today's episode, I welcome an old friend to discuss the perfectionism associated within the fitness industry and perfectionism associated with the idea of being vegan. So my guest has been vegan for about 5 years now, and she discusses all of the perspectives and common assumptions around those who choose to be vegan. We then take some time to discuss her new side hustle that she's developed. So she's developed this business called Plantivore, where ultimately she creates a variety of vegan recipes and either offers cooking classes or vegan catering. So stay tuned to hear more from my very special guest, Olivia Lee. Welcome, Olivia. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So just to start, I just wanted to get into a little bit of like what you're doing right now. Can you just give a little bit of a background of like what you're up to?
Yeah, sure. That's like always a challenging question for me to answer because I feel like I'm always doing a thousand different things. But primarily, I teach fitness classes at the community gym downtown. So I'm teaching some boxing and some spin classes part-time. And then I also help my boyfriend manage his business. So he runs a hockey development program. I do all his bookkeeping and kind of do some administrative stuff with that. And then at the same time, I'm also in the process of starting my own little side hustle. So I do vegan catering and cooking classes. So when someone asks me that, it's a big mouthful of a thousand different things, but that's pretty much the gist of it.
That's awesome. That's a lot going on. So I know you got a degree in kinesiology here at the U of M. So did that kind of kickstart your interest in becoming involved in the fitness world?
For sure. Yeah. I feel like I've always kind of been interested in fitness. Coming from the background, I was a gymnast for like my entire childhood and then competitive cheerleading. So I feel that like that hyper awareness of your body has always been something that's just been like in my life. And I think that kind of led me to want to pursue a career in fitness. So yeah, initially I had wanted to become a physiotherapist, so kind of took all the steps to do that. But then as I started the kinesiology program, I just loved the like exercise and fitness component of it. So I kind of pursued a career more in that direction in personal training and strength and conditioning.
Okay, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
So, and your classes in the community, they're like, I guess like 45 minutes to an hour. How do you, like being a motivator, is there anything that you find really difficult that you have to, like messages that you deliver to your clients during that short amount of time?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. Now I've been teaching fitness like since I was 18. I started teaching at Shapes. I was teaching classes there. And then, so I've been doing that for, I would say like almost 10 years, I've been teaching fitness, and the fitness world has really changed a lot in that time. But I would say, yeah, the biggest struggle for me in that 45 minutes with someone is like helping them truly disconnect from their day and to not carry whatever is going on outside of the doors with them into their workout and really just feeling safe in a space to like express things inside themselves that they don't normally get to express, particularly with boxing, like really getting people to dig deep and like get angry and just like let out that stress that's inside. I think it's like giving people that permission and allowing them to feel safe. That's always the biggest kind of hurdle with motivating people. But I think once people find that and experience it, it's like an incredible feeling.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I still have to come to a boxing class.
Yes, you do. If I had a dollar for every person that said that to me, oh, I got to come to one of your classes.
I know.
I'd have like $10.
No, I'm pumped to try it out. So like in the fitness world, there's so many extremes. So you have like the bodybuilding community, you have like the self-love community. So kind of where do you stand on that? What's your perspective on being fit
My like fitness experience, like I said, I've been in, I would say like the fitness world for a long time and it's changed a lot. I think when I first got into fitness, it was all about like being less and it was about like shrinking your body and wanting to be smaller. And that's kind of like the approach that I took to it when I first got into classes and kind of teaching and doing my own workouts. It's like, how could I lose weight? Like, how could I get smaller? How could I be less? And now I think I've at least seen the message shift a lot more for women, particularly in like taking up space and being more and understanding that like your body is not meant to be smaller. It's meant to, you know, be strong and that you are allowed to lift heavy weights and take up space and be a strong woman. And I think when I first got into fitness, like that was absolutely not the message that I had ever seen. So yeah, I've definitely seen that come around. And I'm so disconnected from like you say, like the bodybuilding type stuff. Like that's just not in my reality because I've been in group fitness for so long. We don't really see that.
Okay.
more so when I was like working at Shapes, you saw a lot of that, like kind of the, I would call them like meathead.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
Maybe you can bleep that out. I don't know if that's not that's, the right word.
That's
but
fair.
In group fitness, we don't really see that anymore. And it's kind of nice. We see like a really broad demographic of people, and it is very like, it's very inclusive, I think, in terms of where I am right now. So it's been good to see.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. And so being a woman in the fitness community, do you ever, have you ever experienced like people saying like, oh, I don't want a girl to teach me how to box or.
Yeah, it's been really interesting, especially, well, I think more so I felt it when I was so previously to what I do now. I worked at a strength and conditioning facility. So we worked with a lot of athletes,
right.
A lot of hockey teams, basketball teams, whatever. And that I think I felt more of a challenge of people perceiving my, I guess, like education or experience is less than a lot of the males I worked with. It was right. a predominantly male oriented industry. And actually where I worked, I was the only female of six trainers. So that was a big struggle just in terms of like having the same level of confidence that the guys have working mm-hmm. with guys. And I think there's just that like connection that men have with other men that I don't necessarily, I could never really necessarily find. And so like I did that for a couple of years and I just found it didn't really feel right for me. And so I started working more with women. I just totally fell in love with it. And especially where I was doing a lot more strength training, I just loved, you know, seeing women transform their kind of perception around strength and, you know, what they believe their bodies could do and what they were able to do. It was really interesting to see. And I just loved working with women and kind of stuck with that route. And then when I left that place and I started teaching at Cycle, started teaching spin classes, I was obviously exposed to like a very different demographic of people, but
just kind of brought in like your clientele, I guess.
Yeah. It just changed a lot and it continues to. But in the context of boxing now, like you had asked, no, I don't really see that, at least not to my face anyways. I don't know. Maybe people are like, who's this girl
right.
telling me how to box? I think whether or not I'm like the best boxer, which I'm absolutely not, like mm-hmm. I don't have background in boxing. Yes, we trained a lot and learned a lot of technicalities of it. But I think it's more so like the message and the motivational style that I bring to my classes is what people appreciate, whether or not like my technical cues are the best.
Right.
I don't find people to be too critical of it because what we're doing is not training boxers. We're teaching fitness.
Right.
And
okay.
so, you know, people aren't overly like analyzing like, oh, her left hook wasn't like the proper form. Like,
right.
because that's not what we're trying to do. We're not teaching people to fight. We're teaching people yeah. fitness, and we just want to create a safe space for people to exercise. So I think it's, you know, the message that we try and bring in our classes and the motivational style that I have, people seem to like and appreciate, whether or not I'm like the best boxer. So,
right.
Yeah.
No, for sure. And so community obviously has their own mantra and their own messages that they want to deliver to their clients. So what kind of is their overall purpose with having boxing classes and spin and like those HIIT classes that they have?
Yeah, I think it's just wanting to be an inclusive space for all and kind of providing an opportunity to find your movement.
Okay.
And I think like for a long time, basically our only options in terms of gyms were like Shapes and Good Life. And
right.
It's like you showed up and you're like, what the heck am I supposed to be doing? So I think the idea behind the community was just like we wanted to offer all of these different things for people to feel confident and safe in doing stuff they wouldn't normally. Like they're not going to go do a spin class on their own, or they're not going to
yeah.
go ride a bike for 45 minutes on their own, or go punch a bag for 45 minutes. So it's like creating that space for people to find their movement and feel confident and comfortable in that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, and being a motivator, obviously like nobody wakes up perfect every single day. No one's always motivated all the time. Do you ever kind of have an internal struggle of like, oh my God, I have to wake up and like teach
oh,
these
yeah,
people?
Oh yeah, for sure. That's really right? hard. There's definitely been days where I've gone to teach a class and I'm just like not in the mindset for it. I'm like,
yeah.
I don't feel motivated. How am I supposed to motivate people?
Right.
But it's really interesting, like especially, and this is what I love so much about group fitness is like once those doors close, the lights dim down low, nobody can really see you.
Yeah.
And the music gets loud and you just like connect to that beat and it just takes away everything that you were feeling the moment before. It's mm-hmm. like suddenly disappeared and you kind of lose yourself in that 45 minutes. At least that's how it is for me. And like a lot of the things that I say and the messages that I bring in my teaching, I don't even know where they come from half the time, but it's just like in the moment I'm like saying stuff. And at the end of class, like there's been so many times where people have come out crying and they're like, that was just like such an important like part of my day. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't even know what I said, but like, you're welcome. So I think that's just like the power of music and group energy is that like when you're surrounded by, you know, 25, 30 people who are all just like moving together and pushing themselves and making themselves uncomfortable, you kind of forget about like any of the that was going on in your life right. 5 minutes prior.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, yeah.
And even just to give some context, like you and I met at Cycle Studio and you were my manager.
Yes.
I've taken so many of your classes, and the thing that honestly resonates with me today, because I am a fairly active person. I work at like 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And you always had said you can do anything for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And that like will never leave my head. Yeah. Like whenever I'm doing something so like at the time where when I think it's so hard, I'm like, okay, I can do this for 10 more seconds.
Yeah.
So
that's
yeah, messages go a long way, and it's like really important to recognize that.
Yeah. And I think like the one thing for me that's become really like a prominent, I guess, like staple in my classes, something that I say a lot is you don't have to do this. You get to do this.
Right.
You don't ever have to exercise. No one is forcing you to be here. And I think it's like recognizing that there's such a privilege in being able to choose fitness, because like for so many people, that's not a reality. For so many people, it's not a reality to wake up and be like, oh, when's my workout today? Like
right.
That's just like such a privileged opportunity. So that's become like a huge part of kind of how I motivate now. It's like, no one's forcing you to be here. You get to be here.
Yeah.
And when you approach fitness with that kind of like gratitude and that kind of like, yeah, just in that way where like recognizing like, damn, like, yeah, I do get to be here. I don't have to be here.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes it so much better. And that's something I've like really tried to bring forth in my teaching lately.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think there's always been a mindset, or like pretty common mindset is like, oh, I have to work
right,
out today.
Exactly.
And like, but yeah, I guess like changing the perspective around fitness, it's like my body is able to do this.
For sure. Yeah. And that's something I say a lot. It's like recognize what your body's doing for you in this moment. Like
yeah.
When we're doing hard, when we're holding a plank for like 30 seconds or probably longer than 30 seconds, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's like recognize what your body is doing for you in this moment and recognize like what a privilege that is.
Oh, 100%.
And that's, you're just like, okay, yeah, I can get through this. I can do this. And
yeah.
It makes it a lot better.
Completely. And so again, like at Cycle Studio, you took up a management position for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I know that you had stepped back after like a time, like a period of time. So how was that for you? Like, what did you kind of learn in that experience?
Yeah, that was really interesting. That was kind of my first, like, I'd been in management roles prior, but the number of people that I was managing was significantly lower. And it was mostly actually like self-directed management. But with Cycle, it was like overseeing 25 very different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And especially like in the fitness world, if you're in kind of like boutique fitness right now, I think there's often like a power struggle for people wanting to become fitness instructors. Because it's seen as this kind of like maybe like prestigious role. And it is like I value my opportunity, my role so, so much. And I've worked really hard to kind of get where I am today. And I think there's like a lot of entitlement that comes in that I've seen anyways in my management role of people coming to the position and just like expecting that people are going to come to their classes, expecting that
right.
like all the bikes are going to be filled. And it's like, no, you need to work for that and you need to hustle for that and you need to create that connection with people. And I think it was like, I saw a lot, yeah, just a lot of that like entitlement, and it was hard. It was really hard to work with people. And it kind of took away a little bit of the joy of teaching for me.
Yeah.
When like as a manager, you're taking care of so many different aspects of the studio that when I would show up to the studio to teach, it wasn't just about my class. It was like all the other things that I had to do in the studio too. And
yeah.
It was like, it kind of, yeah, it just took away that like that pure enjoyment that I used to feel with teaching. So I just realized that maybe going back to solely teaching and not managing is kind of where the direction that I wanted to go anyways. And it was a great learning experience. And I definitely experienced a lot of self-growth just in terms of like how to communicate with people.
Totally.
And
yeah.
Manage 25 different, like very different personalities and keep people yeah. happy is not an easy thing to do. So props to all the people in management roles out there, because
yeah.
it is not an easy job. And now I'm like significantly more aware of that. But yeah.
It was definitely an interesting time.
And
so like you say, like people kind of have to work for their bikes to be filled or their
yes,
classes to be waitlisted. So how would you like, how do you go about doing that? Because I assume that your classes are always so busy.
Well, you know, I got a waitlist here and there. No. I guess it's just that like really personal connection. Like for me, I really take pride in like getting to know every single person that comes to one of my classes
mm-hmm.
and trying to connect with them on a deeper level and just like ultimately giving them the best possible experience that I can, and feeling so damn grateful every single time I get to teach and recognizing what a privilege it is. I really try and like express that gratitude in my classes, and like I genuinely want people to know that like you being here, you being in my class means the absolute world to me, because
right.
it is the best part of my day and I want it to be the best part of someone's day. So I don't take that lightly at all. And yeah, I think it's just like allowing yourself to feel a little bit crazy. I definitely feel like I have an alter ego when I teach. And yeah, I get a little bit psycho and like kind of a different person, but it's like being vulnerable and just like letting go of any expectation you had of yourself. And I think like sharing that vulnerability in front of people like immediately helps them connect to you better. So yeah, I think that's kind of how I've built a lot of relationships with people who regularly come to my classes and seem to like what I'm saying and doing. So
yeah absolutely. So within like a boxing class, I'm pretty interested in what kind of happens during the entire 45 minutes.
Yeah. So we start with kind of the technical aspects of it, going through all of the punches, going through the footwork, the stance, and just kind of teaching you like how to punch that bag properly and use your body to its full effect. Because I think a lot of the time in boxing, we see people just kind of like flailing their arms around and not really understanding that like full body connection. So we really touch on that for the first little bit. And then, yeah, basically we're on the bag almost for the full class. And it's all to the beat of the music. So if you are someone who is musically inclined, it is definitely something that you would love to do. So we're working with different combinations at different speeds, adding in footwork, adding in some defensive moves. And then there's also like a lower body and core component. So we are working a bit on and off the bag, but yeah, it's definitely a full body workout in 45 minutes.
That's insane. I'm so excited to try
it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for somebody that has never boxed before, like
me, I've never boxed before. Prior to having taught these classes, I had never boxed before.
Really? Okay.
So yeah, it is definitely beginner friendly, and that's the way it's designed. Like again, the idea is not to teach people to like go on the street and fight. Like it's not to teach boxers. It's to give people just a different way to find fitness with boxing as like the conduit, I guess you could say. But we're not teaching fighters. We're teaching fitness. I always try and say that. So yeah, it's absolutely beginner friendly. You do not need to have any prerequisite. In fact, I would say like 80-90% of people who come through have never boxed before. We do get the occasional like person who's maybe gone to Pan Am or some of the other boxing places, but that's not really who we cater towards. Obviously everyone is welcome, but we definitely try and cater towards that beginner because all of us are beginners at some point.
Oh, totally. That's so awesome. And so community offers three types of classes.
Four. Boxing, cycle, boot camp, and yoga. We call it Crush, Camp, Calm, and Cycle.
Right. And so you teach spin and...
I teach cycle, crush, and camp. And then we also have combo classes. So we're like combining two of those classes together and making it a 60-minute format. So we offer a lot of different stuff. There is definitely something for everyone at every level.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So we're just going to take a break and play some music. So up next is a song by Mike Posner, which will always remind me of Olivia. She's played it in so many of her spin classes that I've taken with her. So here is Move On by Mike Posner from his album, A Real Good Kid.
I wish Tracy Chapman was my friend. She would know exactly what to say. Beginnings always hide themselves in ends. At some point I will be okay. I got high when I met you. I got high to forget you. I feel pain. I don't want to, but I have to. Yeah, I have to. If I want to move on.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you, Olivia, for being here with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So I just wanted to talk about your side business that you have going on. So that's Plantivore, correct?
Plantivore, yeah. That's
okay.
What it's called.
Can you just explain like kind of what that service is?
Yeah. So I would describe it as like a collective of food services is basically what I've been calling it. All plant-based. So it's primarily catering and cooking classes is what I'm doing right now. So the cooking classes have been kind of the biggest component where I would basically go into your home. You would invite like your girlfriends over and I bring all the groceries and we cook a 4-course meal together and eat. And it's all vegan, all plant-based. So yeah, it's like a learning. It's like a 3-hour learning process of working with plant-based ingredients and kind of making like really delicious meals.
That's so fun. I've seen it all over Instagram and it looks amazing. I really want to try
it out. It's been going really, really well. I absolutely love it. And the feedback has been awesome so far.
That's good. I remember when you were like, kind of, well, you've been, how long have you been vegan for?
I guess like, yeah, 5 years now.
Okay.
Almost 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And you like used to put up stories of like, this is my salad today. And like, this is where you can get protein.
Hashtag vegan.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed it because it was a really, it was like an accessible way for people to kind of maybe be introduced to veganism.
Yeah,
and just
for
kinda,
sure.
Like,
for
dip
sure.
their toe. So what, and you, so you've been vegan for 5 years now.
Yeah.
So, and we talked about before, there's so many extremes of being vegan and people
yeah.
don't talk about that. So where
yeah.
do you kind of fall in that spectrum?
Yeah. It's really interesting. Like, it's definitely changed a lot, which has been awesome to see. But I remember when I first declared myself as vegan, it was funny, like every kind of conversation you would have with someone and they would find out you're vegan, people kind of like almost shuddered. They were like, ah, mm-hmm. like they assumed that you'd get into like some big topic of like animal rights and like
right.
activism. But for me, that was never the like approach that I ever took to it. I came to it like very personally as a decision myself and kind of like did my own research and got to the point where I fully wanted to become vegan. But yeah, it's changed a lot now. When I say I'm vegan, people are like, oh yeah, cool. Like, it's just like become like very mainstream
right.
and it's like it's become a lot more common. I definitely, yeah, I would say there's like the extreme vegan that most people right. kind of like used to associate every vegan with, that like vegan who was like passionate about animal rights and
mm-hmm.
kind of like constantly pushing like footage of slaughterhouses at
yeah.
you. And it was like, I have never taken that approach because I don't believe that shaming someone is like the way to help them change.
Okay.
So it's like, for me, I always just wanted to showcase, not showcase, like I'm not showing off, but
yeah.
Just like show what I was eating, because like it wasn't that hard and I really enjoyed everything that I ate all the time. So yeah, on Instagram, I kind of started just like sharing my meals a lot more and like taking pictures and using my fitness pal to like put in the food and kind of show the nutrition, because I think that was always
okay.
like a question a lot of people had. And so I think just like demonstrating positively being vegan, I think
right.
is like made it more approachable for people versus like, you know, you can push all this like negative stuff in people's
yep.
faces. Like, you need to stop eating meat because like animals are dying. But it's like, that's not how you're going to change people. I don't
yeah.
think that message is, when it comes from a negative place, it's not well received. So I've just always tried to take a really positive approach to it and just demonstrate like, yeah, you can be vegan. It can be really easy. So that's kind of where I've taken Plantivore. And that's been kind of the goal behind what I'm doing right now.
That's awesome. And so your boyfriend is also vegan as well, right?
Yes, he is. He would probably like to claim that he came to that by his own conclusion,
oh.
but I'm pretty sure that I had something to do with it.
Okay.
Yeah, he is vegan. And I think just by nature that I do all the cooking in our house. So when we moved in together 5 years ago, that's when I went vegan. So he pretty much by default
wow.
had to go vegan,
I guess.
Because that's all I would buy and all I would cook. But yeah, I would say like now he couldn't, both of us would agree that like we couldn't imagine not being vegan.
Really?
And we couldn't imagine like eating the way we used to eat. Like, he was a huge meat eater, like
really?
Bacon for breakfast, burgers for lunch, steak for dinner,
oh,
like
my God.
Ate a lot, or fish, like ate so much stuff. So yeah, it's just really interesting. Like, we have both, I never ate as much meat as he did, but yeah, we've both changed a lot.
That's crazy. That's
yeah.
awesome. And is your whole family vegan as well?
I wouldn't
sisters?
Say my whole family. Yeah, my sister dabbles.
Mm-hmm.
My parents definitely are like very open-minded to it. I would say they lean in the plant-based direction. They still like
okay.
eat fish. They would still like have cheese in the house and stuff like that.
Right.
But for sure, our family dinners now are like 99% plant-based.
Wow.
And even it's really filtered into like my auntie and my cousins and like my Nana even always
That's
like
so cute.
Cooks vegan stuff. Yeah, it's been really awesome to see my family like totally embraces it and like doesn't judge it at all. And I think too, just like, I always do my best to make the most delicious food that I can. And I think showing people
right.
that it can taste good keeps them open-minded and
yeah.
it's not just eating like gross kale.
Oh no, for
so,
sure, absolutely. It's just
yeah.
like a change in perspective, I guess.
Yeah,
hey?
For sure, for sure.
And so would you say that there's necessarily like a like perfectionism associated with being vegan?
Yeah, hugely. That's funny
yeah.
you say that. And I think like even I have this fear sometimes too, where like you can look over in the corner and see that my bag has leather on it, and like sometimes
okay, yeah.
and like I have like leather shoes, and like
right.
sometimes I'm fearful of people seeing like parts, and like I bought that stuff so long ago and I'm not
right.
going to sell it just because it has leather in it. But
mm-hmm.
there definitely is this like perfectionism. And I think that just comes with like diets in general, that people feel this like very perfectionist need to like control every single aspect of it. And like, especially with veganism, I think that a lot of the times kind of what I have felt is when you tell someone you're vegan, they almost get angry at you. And I
okay.
think it's because they feel guilty themselves that they are not like maybe taking a more plant-based approach. So people really try and argue it with you. So I'm always fearful that if I do like one thing wrong, or if I like accidentally like eat something with honey in it, or like have a leather bag, that people are gonna be like, you're not vegan. And it's like, well, no, I am. Like, I'm really trying. But sometimes I'm like, I'm a little bit fearful of like doing something wrong. And I think that can make it a little bit unapproachable for people.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And it doesn't have to be that extreme.
Exactly. And I've seen a lot of discussion around being vegan, and the idea is like, okay, maybe I was vegan for like a couple days, but then I fell off the wagon on the third day. So how would you recommend for somebody to kind of just like not have that mindset of just completely failing out of this like idea?
I think for me, the idea of change in general comes back to a bigger conversation of like why you want to do something in the first place. And I think for me now it feels easy because I'm so deeply connected to why I don't choose to consume animal products, and identifying my values and then making decisions based on my own personal values is kind of what's led me like in the direction that I have gone. And so I think the struggle for most people is they're trying to make this decision and trying to change because they think they're supposed to, not necessarily because they want to, because they feel guilty about it. So I think it's like having that deeper conversation with yourself about, if you do want to make a change, why do you want to make that change? And why does this actually matter to you? And kind of trying to dig a little bit deeper into your own personal values. And when you can do that and you can make your decisions based on your values, you don't have to rely on willpower.
Totally.
Because I think that's really the struggle that people have, is like, it feels like this willpower decision where it's like, I can't eat cheese. I can't eat cheese. Oh, shit, I hate cheese.
I'm
not vegan anymore. And it's like, if you're making decisions based on values and not willpower, it's going to be a lot easier to sustain because willpower is so finite.
Interesting.
So yeah, and I don't think it has to be an all or nothing thing. Like, you don't have to be 100% vegan. And if you're not 100%, then everything you're doing is like frivolous. Like, there are so many little things that you can do that can have a positive impact on your own health and the environment. Right. And it doesn't have to be 100%. So even in my cooking classes, that's something like I talk about a lot, is like, you don't have to be fully plant-based, but if you can just try and eat more plants, you're going to be doing good things. And it doesn't have to be 100%. And it shouldn't feel hard. It should feel natural. So whatever that looks like for you, do that, and that's okay.
Okay. And so in your cooking classes, does that ever come up? People are like what kind of conversations do you have with people when you're like teaching them to cook, or if you're cooking for them, are they ever like nervous?
I think it's the common conversation, like, people always ask me why I'm vegan. It's like always the number one thing.
Right.
And then often like the conversation revolves around cheese, because I think that's like the biggest vice for people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say like, oh, I could be vegan, but I can't give up cheese. And so like, for me, it's like just having those conversations like, well, why do you even want to be vegan? Like, you say you could be.
Right.
Do you really want to be? Like, why? Like, ask yourself that. And like, a lot of times people don't fully want to be vegan, but they do want to embrace some of the more like plant-based aspects of it. But I think with the cooking classes, like, the biggest thing that I try and show people is that plant-based food can taste amazing, and to not label it as vegan. So like a great example, I did a cooking class a couple weeks ago with, it was like a group of moms and like their daughters and friends and stuff. And so the moms are really intrigued, because like I would say our parents' generation is like the most challenging people to kind of change their perspective on things, because they've like
boomers.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like, to no fault of their own, like, they've grown up a certain way for like 40 to 50 years of their life, and like now all of a sudden things are changing so much. But they were just so shocked at like how good the food was, and they're like, if I serve this to my family and told them that it was vegan, they'd be blown away. I'm like, well, why don't you serve it to your family, but don't say it's vegan?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's food. It's all just food, and it's the labels that we attach to it that immediately create like some kind of connotation. It's funny, like, when I serve people vegan food, if I don't say that it's vegan, they're not looking for something to be wrong with it, versus like the second you're like, oh, it's vegan cheese, they're like, oh, it's not good. But it's like, if I hadn't said that it was vegan or hadn't labeled it as anything, you would have just thought it was really good food.
Right.
So no, it's like, it's always the labels that we attach to things too, that I think that really just changes our experience of it.
No, completely. And so you wrote an article for Vinova Wellness. And
Oh my gosh.
Yes, I did my research. And you explained that our dietary regimens are always changing. But like, if you think about it, people have always been like, okay, this on a plate, there needs to be protein, carbs, and like maybe vegetables.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so how would you explain that, like, it is ever changing?
Yeah. So like, the one thing that I talk about a lot is, I say, like, think in terms of bowls, not plates. Think about like forks over knives.
It's
like kind of like the thing that I say. Although I can't take credit for that, because there is literally a cookbook called Forks Over Knives. But anyways, bowls over plates. And it's like, changing that idea. Like, I think we all grew up looking at, like you said, our food on a plate where it's like, here's my meat, here's my potatoes, here's my broccoli. Mm-hmm. And it's like you can see those kind of clear cut like ideas of like protein, carbs and vegetable.
Right.
So it's like when you switch to eating plant based, you don't get that anymore. And you're not going to see that like definitive breakdown of your food on your plate anymore. And I think it's like overcoming that idea that you need to like see a clear cut piece of protein to know that you're getting protein in your meal.
Right.
Because ultimately there's protein in everything that you eat. Like mm-hmm. there's protein in every vegetable, in every grain. It's there. But with plant-based eating, you just have to like combine a lot of different things. And I always say, like, if you just make these really delicious bowls, like stop thinking about your plate, stop thinking about like these like definitive lines that you need to break down of your food groups, just throw it all in a bowl and like right. mash it all up, and like that's all you need to do. And it just it makes it a lot easier.
No, for sure. I can like, and we were talking about boomers before, like thinking about like my mom, like she yeah, would just like totally. Never consider doing something like
no,
that.
No, no, you just always had a plate and it was like roast beef, my like whatever, boiled beet, like boiled Brussels sprouts, and yeah. like that was it. And it's just like that's such a traditional way to approach food, but it's the landscape is changing so much.
Totally.
And I think our access to knowledge and information and like even like availability at the grocery store, like I'm sure totally. When our parents were going to the grocery store, there wasn't like a vegan section of
oh,
foods
never.
Like that absolutely yeah. was not happening. So it's like fair mm-hmm. that you know the way that the world was back then is like why they ate the way that they did, and like why we probably eat the way we do is because like you tend to keep doing the same things you did when you were growing up.
Yeah,
so
completely.
It's easy to get like stuck in that kind of like black and white way of thinking when
right.
nowadays like everything is gray. There's no black and white anymore.
Oh, absolutely. And so with your cooking and like teaching classes and stuff like that, how mm-hmm. do you keep yourself educated all the time? Like, how are you keeping up with
yeah, so I think it's just like for me being in my own kitchen as much as I can and trialing recipes all the time. I have done quite a bit of continuing education. I've done some online culinary training. So I did
nice.
A 7-month online program. And then last summer I went to a culinary school for a month and did a strictly plant-based program. So like I'm always looking for my own continuing education opportunities, but it is really challenging because I feel that what I'm doing right now is like I'm basically like creating my own industry, I guess you could say,
mm-hmm,
of like plant-based
sure.
cooking classes. So there's no course that I could take that like teaches me how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I'm doing too right now is I'm completing a through the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition, I'm becoming a registered holistic nutritionist.
Oh my God.
So that's a 2-year program. So I'm kind of dabbling with that in the background too. So I'm always trying to apply like those educational principles into the foods that I'm creating. So yeah, it's just been a lot of my own like research, I guess, and like mostly trial and error and sharing things with people. And if it goes well, then it's something I'll run with. And if it doesn't go well, then I kind of like go back to the drawing board and try and figure it out.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And again, in that Vinova Wellness article that you wrote, you mentioned that like, when you search something on the internet, there's a million
results.
It's
insane.
And
it's
you
like
say to kind of just buy a cookbook.
Yeah, that's always like my number one tip is just like go buy a book. And I think because for me, when I first went vegan, I bought the Oshi Glows cookbook. Like
right.
I just went and bought that cookbook and I pretty much strictly cooked from that book for like the first few months of being vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And had I not done that, I think that if I had, like you say, like go on Google and you type in vegan recipes, like you'll literally get a billion hits. And it's like, where do you even start? And how do you know what's good? So for me, like going back to cookbooks, which is like more like of a traditional way to look at things, I think it's just like shutting out the noise and trusting this, like putting your trust in one person and seeing where that takes you. And I think there's a lot more that can be gained in terms of skills if you just like kind of focus on cooking from a book. And then now I can apply those skills to like everything else I cook. But I think it just like really gave me a good foundation. So that is definitely something I always say to people is like, get off the internet, get off Instagram and just
right.
go buy a cookbook, go buy a really good cookbook. And I have a couple that I recommend to people. But yeah, and just start cooking from there and don't look all over the internet for things, because that's where I think a lot of confusion comes in is the internet. Like it's insane how much information we're exposed to now.
So like you mentioned, there's so much like on Instagram and social media. Has anyone ever kind of like contacted you through social media and been like, this is, I don't like what you're doing? Have you ever received criticism in
no,
that way?
No, no haters yet.
Amazing. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, people, I think a lot of people have asked me like just questions, like wanting to understand more, but not necessarily coming at it like what you're saying is wrong,
mm-hmm.
like blah, blah, blah. No, people have like come at me with genuine interest where it's like, oh, but I've heard that, you know, being vegan can be more expensive, you know,
right.
questions like that. So that's definitely what I've received more of. None of the haters yet, unless
that's
they're
good.
Like silent haters. I don't know. But no, I haven't received any criticism. But I think it's because I don't approach things like with a really like stern, harsh tone. Like whenever I'm sharing information, I'm purely talking about my own experience, and someone can't tell me that my experience is wrong.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
I'm only sharing what I know, because what I've done has worked for me. This is why. Maybe if you try it too, it might work for you. But I'm not saying like do this and you'll feel this way. Like I never talk in extremes or black and white. So I think like in that way, that kind of prevents anyone from coming at me saying like what you're saying is wrong, because it's like, well, it's my experience, so who are you to say that my experience is wrong?
Completely. And who are you to like not have, like, who are you to like have this idea,
right?
This
exactly
dream, right?
Exactly.
So I know that we've discussed before, like, the idea of imposter syndrome is so common in like so many people I talk to. So do you experience imposter syndrome with this business, or
for
even
sure? Yeah, for sure. I think, like we've talked about before, it becomes more challenging, like for us as millennials, I guess we're both millennials, we're in that world, because I don't think there's like a clear cut path to jobs anymore, unless you're like going to med school and becoming a doctor, or you're going to dentistry to become a dentist or a lawyer or accountant, and all those things where when someone asks you like, oh, what do you do? And you can say like, I'm an accountant. And it's like, okay, yeah, like people understand that. But like for me, like even when you first asked me like, oh, what do you do? I'm like, I do a lot of different things. So it's like, yeah, there's definitely a sense of imposter syndrome where it's like, who am I to like start this like vegan business and like teach people how to cook, when it's like, I'm not a chef. Like I was never classically trained as a chef. So who am I to like show someone how to like chop their onion properly or like massage kale and like do all that stuff? So yeah, it's like I'm constantly, I guess, fearful of like what I'm putting out into the world, because I am fearful that someone's going to come at me and be like, oh, that's wrong. That's not right. Like, you're not a professional. You can't say that, or you can't tell someone that like this is the way to do something. So yeah, there is for sure that like huge imposter syndrome, just because like there's no kind of like clear cut way to like define what I'm doing.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah.
But like no one has ever come up to you and been like, oh, this is a bad idea. You know?
Not yet. No, it's been met with like a lot of, not praise. Praise is not the right word, but support. A lot of people have been like, that's awesome what you're doing. And yeah, so far it's been very positive feedback. Not much criticism yet. So
okay,
we'll
that's
see.
Good.
We'll see.
And I know we've talked about before, like you came from like a fairly privileged like home and family.
Yeah, totally.
So you've never really
totally not like some like privileged girl, but I am. Yeah. We talked about that. Yeah, because I know we were kind of talking about like one of the things that I struggle with is like asking for money and charging for my services.
Right.
And I think that's where that like imposter syndrome comes into play. It's like not knowing how to value myself and what I'm providing. And like you said, like I came from a family who was like always able to support like my siblings and I and everything that we were doing, like whatever sports we wanted to do. They supported me. My parents supported me through school and like all of like a lot of like the continuing education stuff I've done. And like I feel incredibly grateful for that. And so now I'm at a point in my life where it's like I'm starting this business and like I need to make money. Like I need to charge for what I'm doing. But it's a really like big hurdle to overcome when I've never felt like I had to like suffer for money. So it's like a weird, it's a really weird thing, and it can be challenging to like ask someone to pay me for like the stuff that I've done when one, I don't have like a professional designation where I'm like, I am an accountant, this is what you owe me, versus just like, well, like I did this cooking class for you and your friends, like this is what you need to pay me. And so like that's like a hard, that's been probably one of the biggest challenges I have, is like how do I value myself and my time and like be confident in being able to charge that and kind of like receive what I think I'm worth. So yeah, that's been tough, I guess.
No, for sure. And I mean, like, if you're providing somebody's service and you want to continue this service because people love it so much, if you're not getting paid, like how are you
gonna, exactly
further your business?
Yeah. And it's like I constantly feel guilty when I have to like ask people for money.
Yeah.
But and I'm sure a lot of like people when you're first starting out in business, like you don't know, you don't really know how to charge and you don't really know what you're worth and you don't know what people are going to value you at too. It's like you're worried about what other people's perceptions of what you're doing are. And I think that like plays a lot into me not being like confident in charging people money. But you're right, like if I want to continue what I'm doing, like at some point I have to.
Oh, completely.
I can't do it
yeah.
for free. So yeah, it's a challenge, but it's a learning process, I guess.
No, it's like pretty humbling. And I know that we've talked about before, like you kind of have this idea of not wanting to fail. And I think that's so insanely common. Like,
yeah.
So how have you kind of learned to overcome that? Or do you still even struggle with that?
Yeah, I for sure still struggle with that. And I think there's always like so much I want to be doing, but I'm fearful of like chasing bigger things, I guess. And right now I think I've kind of like saved myself from not failing by not fully putting myself out there. Like, I don't really promote my services much. It's all been a lot of word of mouth. So anyone that has found me, it's probably because someone did one of my classes and then like talked about it, which has been really great because it's been like kind of an organic way to grow, I guess you could say.
Totally.
But I haven't really like put myself out there and like looked for business. So if like I wanted to cater an event, like I haven't like put myself out there and be like, hey, can I like cater this event for you? Because like I'm so afraid of people being like, no, we don't want you, or like, no, it's not gonna be good, or like stuff like that. So I think I've like really isolated and like protected myself from that by not like pushing what I'm doing too hard. But I know that like if I want to see it grow and get bigger, then I have to start like putting myself out there a little bit more. But I think like for me, what I try and think about is like, I know so deeply that I want to do this. And so I try and remember, like, the fear of not doing it is bigger than the fear I have of failing while trying to do it.
Completely.
So, like, we've talked about that where it's like, would I rather kind of just sit back and do nothing, even though I know, like, deep in my heart that this is what I want to do? Mm-hmm. And or, like, would I rather just go for it and see what happens? So I think it's like eventually you come to a certain point where you're like, you know what? No, I'm just going to go do it. And like that fear of not doing it is bigger than the fear of doing it. And that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah. And I think that anybody listening can definitely see a resemblance in anything that they want to do from like what you have to say, because like,
yeah, totally. It can apply to anything.
Oh, absolutely. And like the biggest thing is like just starting, you know, like it's, people have this like fear of just being like, who am I to have this big dream?
Totally.
And who am I to have this big idea? But like, you'll never know if you don't start. And like,
yeah,
failure is like the best way.
For sure.
To learn,
yeah. You
right?
hear it all the time. Like, from failure, like it's not failure, it's an opportunity to grow.
Completely.
So it's like I don't feel that I've had any like major failure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just like all the little things that I'm continuously doing are learning opportunities for me, and I can keep expanding from that. But yeah, you're right. Like,
I think you're gonna listen to this episode and be like, oh my god, like I need to start like making
go
my business
bigger,
big.
Go bigger.
Completely. Yeah, why not? Like, I think it's an awesome opportunity, and you've also had so much amazing feedback from people.
Yeah, no, the support has been amazing. And
yeah,
I obviously, if there wasn't support, then I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
But I think we just live in like such an interesting time where it's like, whatever you want to do, you can do.
100%.
Like, nothing, like, yes, I have a university degree and I like didn't, and I've been in school for a long time, but like I feel that a lot of what I'm doing right now is just me figuring it out on my own.
Yeah.
And like Googling things and YouTubing things and
totally.
Just like, okay, well, I gotta like open up a new bank account and learn how to use QuickBooks and like learn
right.
how to do all this stuff where it's like, no one really taught me to do that, but I know that I need to do this, so I'm just gonna figure it out. And like, we live in a time where it's like, you can find anything you want on the internet, and if you
totally.
Really want something bad enough, like you can figure it out. There's a resource for it. There's a free online guidebook
yeah.
to like help you figure out what you need.
Right.
So yeah, like there, you can do whatever you want. I just think it's like such an interesting age to live in, like especially for millennials. Like, we can, the world is our oyster.
Absolutely,
there's so much opportunity.
I mean, and like, I've had this feeling too, like, for example, going through school, I've had ideas of like starting a little business
yeah,
or starting a little
yeah.
side hustle, but I've already been like, for example, in an arts degree.
Right.
And I'm like, wait, but I need to go to Asper first.
Right.
You know, and like, there's just always like these checks, like things on a checklist
yeah.
that you need to check off. But like, there's been so many examples of you don't actually need to check off this big checklist that like
for
society
sure.
has placed.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I think that your story is an amazing example of that. And like, it's just time.
Yeah, because I think like there's no clear cut. Like I don't even know where I'm going.
Yeah,
so it's like,
exactly.
how do I know how to get there if I don't even know what I'm doing?
Totally.
Versus like we always say, like, you can go back to those more like traditional types of jobs where it's like, okay, you want to be a lawyer. Here's all the things you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
You need to write your LSAT, do your article. I don't actually
right,
know
right,
what
right,
you
right,
need
right.
to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
But there are those like clear cut boxes that you can check to kind of get to where you want to be and know what your end goal is. But versus
mm-hmm.
like starting a business, I think a lot of people don't know what that end point looks like.
Right.
So you're right. It's like absolutely not clear cut.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that can be very confusing and challenging in itself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so for you personally, like, is there anything that you do, maybe have like a daily practice, or are there things that you kind of like gravitate towards that kind of help you get over this like mindset of just being like, where do I start? Or like, I might not be good enough.
Yeah. I think it's just like having people who believe in you to talk to. Like,
mm-hmm.
I know there's a couple of specific people in my life that like, if I'm worried about something or like unsure of like whether I can do something, like
right.
having those like people who are just like deeply in your corner and like want to support you and rally behind you, having those people to talk to has been like huge for me. But I think like ultimately the confidence just comes from action. So it's just like
okay.
taking very small actions every single day and like doing little things to kind of push myself forward
right.
is like what gives me confidence. And like a lot of people are like, oh, you're so confident to start your own business. I'm like, I am not confident at all. Like I have zero confidence.
Right.
But like we said, like I'm fearful of not doing it. So I totally. Have to do it. Like there's yeah. no other choice for me. I have to do it and I have to figure it out. And yeah, like having good people in your corner and people that you trust, I think is like the biggest thing. But there's also just like so many good podcasts and like things to listen to that can inspire you. So I'm definitely always just like listening and reading books and I don't know. Yeah. Just trying to be
just
better.
Not plateauing. You need to like be moving forward kind of thing.
Yeah. And even if it's like for me, it's as little as like, okay, I'm going to test out a new recipe today or yeah. I'm going to like just try something new in the kitchen. It's just like all those just little things every single day is like what keeps the momentum and kind of what keeps you feeling confident in what you're doing. And that's all you can do.
Totally. And like one of the things that I am really trying to incorporate in my like day to day or just even things that I'm working on, for example, this show puts me so much out of my comfort
zone.
Yeah,
hugely.
And like that's what I find, not that I'm like achieving great things,
right,
but like
you
just
are,
even like moving forward, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no, for sure, you? Being wildly uncomfortable and mm-hmm. like yeah, there's something to be said for that. Totally. Just yeah. like be willing to put yourself in uncomfortable positions. Like
yeah.
all of the, especially all the catering stuff that I've done, like I have been so nervous every time
really?
I go and like put out my spreads and like stand there and just like watch
oh
people eat. I'm like, oh my God. Like it is, I'm like shaking the whole time because mm-hmm. I'm like, I hope this is good.
Right.
But I think if you like go your entire life without ever feeling that, like
yeah.
that's not for me, that's like not a way I could imagine living. Like
no.
I need to be uncomfortable. But I think my background in fitness and fitness teaching has like given me a lot of that.
Totally.
Where it's like being an instructor and like being on the mic in front of a room full of people is always uncomfortable. I always feel nervous, but mm-hmm. I constantly get over that. And I think I've been able to apply a lot of those experiences into what I'm doing right now. And it's just like you just got to get over it. You just got to do it and then wait and see what happens.
Completely. And so just kind of going back to like the idea of maybe becoming vegan, how would you recommend for somebody who is like so not there yet but kind of wants to just like flirt with the idea
yeah,
of going
yeah,
vegan?
Yeah, definitely. I get that question a lot, but
yeah.
it kind of always stumps me because for me it felt very black and white. Like I just did it
right.
it was so important to me. I would just say like educate yourself a little bit. Like there's so many documentaries on Netflix that you mm-hmm. can watch that can kind of like get you into the idea of it a little bit more. But I always say like find like what are your favorite recipes. So like for me it was like tacos. Like I loved
okay.
tacos
yeah.
so it's like
yeah.
find a recipe that can like closely mimic the things that you already like to eat and maybe start substituting some of that stuff in. Or if it's like you like chicken curry, well mm-hmm. maybe can you put chickpeas in that curry instead of chicken. So it's just like where can you make little swaps in what you're already eating so that it doesn't feel extreme. And it's like maybe changing one meal once a week and just trying out these like variations of things to see how you feel and to see if you like it. And yeah, just take it from there. I just think small things add up over time.
Totally.
The other thing that you can do is book a cooking class with
yes.
me.
Oh my God, of course.
And I love the cooking classes because people get to try things that they probably wouldn't feel confident to try on their own mm-hmm. and see how easy it is. Because sometimes you see a recipe and you're like, oh my God, there's so many things I need to do. Like, where do I even start?
Right.
So yeah, or doing it with friends, I think, is like having a support system and having someone that wants to do it with you is probably the best way to do it.
Right. Okay, I think this is all the time that we have. Okay. I wish it wasn't over. I'm learning so much. That's awesome.
Maybe you can have me back for part two.
Of course. Is there any way for our listeners to kind of like explore your services or kind of find you on
yeah,
social media?
So probably the best way to find me is on Instagram. My Instagram is @plantivorewinnipeg, but Winnipeg is WPG. I also have a website, www.plantivore.com. So I'm working on building a blog there. I've got a little email list going
nice.
With some stuff that I send out, so you can check me out there. But Instagram is probably the best place. If you DM me, I usually answer within 24 hours.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, if you have any questions, you can definitely reach me on there.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for being
thank
here today.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Yay. All right, thank you so much everyone for tuning in on this episode of Turning Heads right here on UMFM 101.5. So to close the show, I just wanted to play a song that's actually written by my brother. So here is Ambitions by Taylor Cash Davies from his album Periscopes.
Got my luck all turned around. Got my girl to dance with no. Thank God it's you. Thank God it's you. Through my